Okay, I think we can start. 9:31, I see on the East Coast, and welcome. Welcome everybody, class number 72 in our ongoing series. And like always, I want to thank you, Potchim B'Chvod Aksanya, all the people who come to enable me to give the shiur and prepare for the shiur. So I was continuing that. I said, you know what? It's Purim on Tuesday, so we have to discuss a little Purim, of course, but since it's a class on Tefillah, and I checked my notes, I see unless I'm missing them. We did not talk about Al HaNisim on Purim last year. We talked about it, I know, on Hanukkah, but obviously the Hanukkah version. So we'll see. And if there's any time left over, you know, that'll be interesting. Then we can go back to our regular series. Okay, I just see somebody sent me a private note. It's interesting on this manim. I was saying that when I was a kid, just to pick up from last week, when, you know, Shabbos used to end always an hour later. And now it ends about an hour and 7 minutes later, whatever happened. So it was very fascinating. Last Shabbos in Shul, B'Shem Mincha Maariv, somebody says to me, why does Shabbos end so late these days? It always ends later. I was like blown away. I said, I just spoke about that. Am I sure this morning? I don't exactly know why, but somebody sent me a private text that in their Shul, it's exactly 1 hour. Okay. They're asking for a lesson on Zmanim. So we did have a lesson. We had a three-part series. Oh boy, it's really bad of me. I'm forgetting who gave this series. He's really the world's expert on Zmanim. He's a scientist. It's like a pet peeve of his. His son-in-law is Rav Aryeh Leibowitz, who also spoke, I heard yesterday for the first time live, his 10-minute Divrei Halacha. People may know about it. Rosh Hashiva at YU. But we did have a series. If you send me an email, I can send you the link. I can't, his name slips my memory. I apologize. We did it about a year ago and on Zmanim. And let's just say, very, very, very quickly and briefly, in different periods of Jewish history and different periods of times, you know, Shabbos either started much earlier or much later than we started. And most of the time, much later. You know, according to the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbeinu Tam is the correct way to observe Shabbos. In other words, Rabbeinu Tam assumes it gets darker much, much later than we assume, the way most people. Now, when Rabbeinu Tzol, I'm sure most people know that people who want to be strict, they end Shabbos, they hold Rabbeinu Tam. So if you hold Rabbeinu Tam, you end Shabbos basically 72 minutes after sunset, a half an hour later, more or less. Shabbos ends approximately half an hour later. So I don't know how many people here on this call do that. I imagine not too many, and not so many people do that, but, you know, some people want to be strict like Rabbeinu Tam. But it's not that Rabbeinu Tam, he wasn't strict, because according to Rabbeinu Tam, you can begin Shabbos later. It's not like Rabbeinu Tam said end Shabbos later. Rabbeinu Tam thinks the day begins about 55 minutes later. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, let's say in Toronto, when is sunset this evening? About 6 o'clock in Toronto, 5:55. I don't know, or let me know. 5:55 is sunset. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, at 6:45, you can drive your car. I mean, he didn't say you can drive your car, but 55 minutes, 57 and a half minutes after sunset, you can still, no, I mean, today nobody holds like that. But so people are strict. We hold that it's at sunset that day begins, not at nightfall. That's really the argument. At what point? Sunset or nightfall and the gap between. And but people are strict Rabbeinu Tam. But there were many times in history that many people observed Rabbeinu Tam. My understanding, I heard from a prominent rabbi that Ara Yom Hazeh, when I heard it from him, in certain enclaves in the Orthodox world, Ara Yom Hazeh, they hold like Rabbeinu Tam. And Friday afternoon, people are working, you know, a half an hour after sunset. So, you know, it's very, very interesting. So Zmanim is a fascinating topic. It's an amazing topic, but really that's not at all our topic. Okay. But since I did mention it last week, I wanted to pick up on that. Okay. All right. Let's continue. Okay. Let's continue. We're going to start Al HaNisim. So first of all, okay, consider, when did the Jewish people pray in Shushan? The class on the Siddur. So what prayers did the Jewish people say in Shushan? It's like a trick question. Because the answer is, at least the obvious answer is, none. They did fast. Esther, but there's not one mention of prayer in Megillat Esther. Now, why that is a fascinating discussion. We've alluded to in classes. I don't know, other people, you know, there are many different ways to read Megillat Esther. The beauty of the book is it lends, and that's of course on purpose, it lends itself to many readings. And one of the readings is a very assimilationist reading, that the Jews were pretty not religious. I mean, even when Chazal say they ate from the Suda of Achashverosh, I don't know if presumably they didn't have kosher food, or maybe they did, I don't know. But presumably they ate at the Suda of Achashverosh, they weren't eating kosher food. The Jews were assimilated. We know the Rambam says prayer, the reason we have prayer, the way we have prayer today, is because of this assimilation. When the Jews went to Babel, basically in 586, really 597, the first exile was 11 years before, if you look at the end of Tanakh in Malachim Bay, the exile was really 11 years early. Now, it's unclear, I think Rabbi Bazak in his Hebrew shiur on Sunday issued the Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish Yishimini Yasher Haglam Yerushalayim. Who was Haglam Yerushalayim? Who was exile? Was it Mordechai or Kish? Right? So it's probably Kish. That's the debate. And that, of course, is the debate. When is the timeline of the Megillah? But they were exiled in 597, then again in 586 with the destruction of the temple. And the Rambam says within a generation, the people didn't speak Hebrew anymore. They spoke five languages backwards. You know, like I went through obviously I can't mention any names, but I was once at an event and a rab got up to speak. So somebody called to me, he speaks three languages poorly. You know, when they speak in Yiddish and Hebrew, English, Yiddish, whatever. So that's the Rambam says that's what happened. The Jews were speaking all different languages. They didn't know what to do. So the Anshei Knesset Agdola came along and said, no, here's the prayer. Because as we've discussed many times, prayers from the heart. It's spontaneous. We're not supposed to have a text for prayer, but it's very hard. We wouldn't know what to say. So
Rabbi, I have heard that when the Jews all fasted for 3 days, when Esther asked him to fast and she fasted as well, that was with prayer.
It could be. But that's what I'm saying. There are many ways to read the Megillah, but the Megillah doesn't say they prayed. Listen, the simplest meaning, when were the 3 days they fasted? What days on the calendar?
Pesach.
When did they fast?
Pesach.
Right, Pesach. Now, how did I know they fast? It says, they fasted on the 13th of I can pull up the verse, but if you have a Megillah and Perek Gimel, Vayishloch Svarim Biyadaretzim, it was on the 12th, the 13th of Nisan, that they sent the messages to, you know, everybody, we're going to wipe out all the Jews. On the 13th of Nisan, we wiped them out in Adar. And then Mordechai rips his clothes and go fast, sumo after 3 days. Well, what do you mean 3 days? That's the Seder. Two starring, maybe. They probably didn't have two starring yet. The simple meaning of the Megillah was Seder. Who observed Pesach? These are assimilated Jews. What do you mean? Now, the Medrash picks up on that. The Medrash says, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, or the Medrash said that, I don't know why I would have, but the Medrash says that Mordechai said, whoa, we can't fast today. When he finally convinces Esther to go into Achashverosh, so Esther says, okay, before I go, everybody fast for 3 days. So Mordechai, hold on, yeah, next week, I didn't mean going today, you'll go in next week, we can't fast, you're not that fast on Pesach. It's B'dikas Chametz tonight, right? Obviously it wasn't, but that's how the Medrash picks up on that, and Esther says to Mordechai, what are you, nuts? It's Pikuach Nefesh. You don't do this now, there won't be Pesach. The Jewish people will be exterminated, right? That's the end of the game. So now, but that's clearly not the simple reading of the Megillah. The simple reading, so even if they were from whatever, so they understood Pikuach Nefesh. But the simple reading of the Megillah is Jews are totally assimilated. And they don't even know it's Pesach. I always like to quote, and people are always blown away when I say this. Okay, what percent, and I live in Toronto, which is known to be a traditional city. Everybody knows that in Canada, we're more traditional than America as a Jewish community. You know, the conservative reform movements are much more traditional than they are in the States. 30% of all Jewish, like, children in Toronto get a day school education. That's in the States, it's like 8%. It's like a totally different community here. Baruch Hashem, in a positive way. We have lots of ways to go, but in a very positive way. New, how many Jews, what percentage of Jews in Toronto go to shul on Yom Kippur? What do you think? The 3-day-a-year Jew. How many Jews? Throw out a number. What percentage of Jews go to Toronto? Don't be afraid. Put it in the chat box, anonymous, whatever. It's okay.
80%.
Good guess. 80%. Anybody think it's higher? 80%. I know everybody I know goes to Shul on Yom Kippur. I'm talking Yom Kippur. That's it. 25%. So Morris is on the ball. I thought it was closer to 30, but Morris might be right. But maybe 20 years ago, it was a 30%. Yeah, you count up every seat in every shul in the city of Toronto, from the humanist minion to the anything that, you know, the secular, where we don't mention God in our Yom Kippur gathering, to, you know, every Haredi community. You add up every seat in shul, about 30,000 seats, 40,000 seats, maybe. There are 200,000 Jews who live in Toronto. Most people, most Jews are not going to shul on Yom Kippur. We live in such a cocoon. We don't understand what's going out there in the wider Jewish community. Maybe because I'm coming back from a rabbinic conference, and one of the sessions we had was how to deal with what's the rabbi's responsibility to the community at large. Forget our little shul and whatever. I mean, so it's, you know, so that's Shushan. Well, the Jews are so religious. Assuming. Remember, the Jew, and some people read the Megillah as the tension, which is, of course, a very, today, it's a very good reading, I would say tragically for our time. The Megillah is read as a book of tension between the Jews in Israel and the Jews living outside of Israel. Because, of course, again, we don't know when the story took place. There are debates, and that's, of course, on purpose. The Megillah is purposely ambiguous. But assuming the Megillah takes place after the Jews are granted the right to come back to Israel, so why are these people in Israel? Why are these people in Persia? What do you mean? They're supposed to go to Israel. But we know most Jews didn't go back, like me and most other people. You know, they didn't go back. And they stayed in Persia. The Jews in Israel were very mad at them, and they didn't want to accept that. There's a whole reading of the Megillah like that, that there's a resentment at the Jews. Look what happened to you guys, and you caused all the problems. You're supposed to be living back in Israel. So, you know, it's very interesting. So there is no obvious prayer in the Megillah. It could be, but the Megillah doesn't say so. The only one reference, and I'll show it to you, and it's even that is not at all clear what it means, but let's just share our screen for a moment, and I'll just show you that's the wrong place. What am I doing here? Okay, so just give me a half a second. Okay, so it's towards the end of the Megillah, of course. Everybody see what's going on here? Why is my thing out of Zoom box? Okay, all right. So at the end of the Megillah, everybody see this, what is going on? Notice Mordechai is Yehudi. I don't know who Esther is. Esther is Bat Abichail. Okay. That's another question. How assimilated was Esther? By Shlach Svarim, they sent books, right? The ninth chapter is all the back and forth. Should Purim be a holiday? The Gemara says the rabbis didn't want to make Purim a holiday. Okay, that's not for now. And how Purim developed. It was meant to be a two-day holiday for everybody. Now we split it, and it's kind of ironic. Like, Purim is supposed to be the holiday of Jewish unity. You know, Yehudim are coming together. That's what Purim's all about. Mishloach Manot, Matanot Lev Yonim, Yeshno Amachad, you know, all that stuff. Purim's all day of Jewish unity. And we have a holiday where, not because we don't know the calendar, because we set up the calendar. If you live in Jerusalem, you celebrate one day. You live outside of Jerusalem, you celebrate another day. It's a little bit not so good. But that's the disunity that's going on in the Jewish people. But the Kayemet, you may notice here, the plural, Purim Ela Bizmanehem, the beginning of Masechet Megillah is a whole long thing. Be in their times. Megillah can be read at many different times, right? In Halacha, you can read the Megillah, at least in the time of the Talmud, from the 11th, 4 days in advance. Okay. Kasher Kiyem Aleihem Mordechai Yehudi. Kasher Kiyemu Al Nafsham, that the Mordechai, the Jew, and Esther, the queen. Interesting. And they brought on their souls, all Zaram and all their descendants, the Vrehat Somot, the fasting. So presumably that's the 3-day fast, Vizakatam, and their Zaka, whatever that means. They're crying out. So right there, let's see here. I'll just show you the Malbim. Why is it not showing up? Resources, just to show commentary. So the Malbim living 19th century, and the most important commentaries on Amnach, especially. We don't know. We don't exactly know what's going on here. But anyways, that's the only theoretical reference to prayer in the Megillah. But fine. Obviously, the rabbis read Megillat Esther as a religious book, in a sense. Now, we know it's also missing God's name. That also gives it this sort of a secular feel to the book. But that's just a little bit of background. There really is no prayer for Megillah. And there was a whole debate whether Purim should be a holiday. The rabbis were, why did the rabbis not want to make Purim a holiday? By the way, anybody know? They didn't want to antagonize the non-Jewish world. What are you doing celebrating, defeating the non-Jewish? We have enough. We have Amalek, you know, we defeated enough times. We don't have to every time something, and basically nothing happened on Purim. I mean, why don't we say hello on Purim? Or at least we'll do now just one of the reasons. Gar says, because nothing happened. What changed from the beginning to the end of the Megillah? What happened is in the middle, there was a crisis. The crisis got solved, but nothing changed. On Pesach, we became free. On Shavuos, let's say, the way we celebrate Shavuos, we got the Torah. On Sukkot, we journeyed towards the land of Israel. On Hanukkah, we reestablished the Beit HaMikdash. What happened on Purim? Nothing. That's chapter 10 in the Megillah. That's what I remember Rav Hadar, Rav Yeshua Hadar, the Rosh Yeshiva and Yeshiva Nakota, when I was there many, many years ago, I remember him speaking about this. What's chapter 10 doing in the Megillah? Chapter 10, it's almost tax season. Maybe it is tax season as a former accountant, right? So, Vayasem HaMelech HaChashverosh Mas. HaChashverosh put taxes on the people. Well, who cares? What do you mean, who cares? Life continues. Taxes, you know, arguing deficits, the GDP, you know, that's what we're talking about. That's it. And Mordechai was Lavid. What's the last pasuk in the Megillah? Mordechai was beloved. L'Ravechav. Mordechai was loved by the majority. Here, I'll pull up the verse. It's mind-boggling. The rabbis are. I love how the rabbis, you know, they're. I don't say their courage, but the way they read things, it's really beautiful. Vayasem Melech Mas, he put taxes. I don't know, in some shuls they bang the Gregor for that too, you know, but okay. B'chol Masei Tokvo V'Ugurato, and everything's written, Shergi Lo HaMelech Alohem Tuvim. You want to read more? Okay, read the history books. Go to the Divrei, read Persian history books. Divrei Sayamim L'Machei Paras Nodai. Ki Mordechai Yudi Mishneh L'Melech HaKirish. Mordechai, like Yosef, because we don't have time for that now, but I'm sure many of you have heard the story of Purim. Is obviously the author of Megillat Esther had the Chumash Vayeshev and by Miketz and Vayigash open in front of him. The parallels to the Yosef story are very big. Rabbi Bazak talked about that. A little bit, we'll go into that. But Mordechai was the Mishneh, the Melech HaKashverosh, like Yosef. Begadol Ayutim, Viratsui, he was beloved. L'Ravechav, he got 62% of the vote. Mordechai, Rav Echad, that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara doesn't say 62%. The Gemara says Rav, but not called. Yeah, more, lots of complainers. You can never satisfy everybody. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't satisfy everybody, but it's more than that. The rabbis say not everybody liked Mordechai. The Sanhedrin didn't like Mordechai. The rabbis didn't like Mordechai. Mordechai was a nutcase. It's a radical. What's he endangering? The Jewish people not bound to him. And there was not, it's not, I don't know what you were taught in kindergarten. Was I taught in kindergarten that, Mordechai was wearing, Haman's wearing an idol and therefore he can't buy that. It's all very nice, but there's absolutely no evidence of that at all. And even if that would be true, it doesn't mean that would be bound down to an idol. And the rabbis were very critical of him in many readings of the Megillah. Well, in that case, you know, you don't start up with the people, but that's what happened. That's what Mordechai, did, but it's interesting. Mordechai was not beloved. So, but the last chapter in the Megillah is telling us nothing happened. So that's what the Gemara says. There's no hello. Most people know the reason there's no hello. Like if you did a survey of 100 relatively knowledgeable Jews, like people here, so you're going to tell me, why don't we say hello on Purim? Everybody tell me why we don't say hello on Purim.
Is the whole Megillah?
I'm sorry?
The whole Megillah is a holiday.
You said you're too smart. Go to the outside of Israel, right? If you went to a Zionist school, of course, that's outside of Israel. Cannot say hallel for a miracle outside of Israel. Maybe we'll come back.
Rabbi Kelman.
Yeah.
Nes Nistar also.
I'm sorry?
A Nes Nistar.
No, so the Gemara gives three reasons we don't say halal. It says, Akate Anan Abdei Achashverosh Anan. We're still slaves to Achashverosh. That's chapter 10. We still have to pay taxes. We're slaves. Nothing changed. The Megillah opens up by Yibi Mei Achashverosh. The Megillah ends by Yibi Mei Achashverosh. It was just 9 years later, 10 years later, you know, that the Megillah ends. The Megillah takes place over 9 years, year three, and then everything exciting happens in year 12.
That's there were also 75,000 Persians killed.
No, that's right. Do we celebrate that? That's a whole discussion. We don't want, like, to make holidays for that's even on Hanukkah. Why is Hanukkah 8 days and not seven? So some say 1 day's for the miracle of the war, and some say no. We don't celebrate when we go to war. That's terrible. Sometimes you have to go to war, but we're not going to make a holiday out of it, right? But I'm saying even that, but that's a tragedy that had to happen for the Jews to be saved, but not, we didn't leave Egypt. We didn't come to Israel. We didn't get the Torah. We didn't rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. We didn't do anything. We paid taxes. So there's nothing to celebrate. Akate Abdei Achashverosh Anan. We're still slaves to Achashverosh. There's no point to say halal. Now, but yet it is holiday. That's like we did make it a holiday, but that's the simple reason. Nothing changed in the Megillah. Over the course of 9 years, it was very nerve wracking. Although if you were a Persian living in Shushan, I don't know if you would have noticed. We read it in a half an hour, so the story's all pretty cool. But, like, remember, Vashti's dethroned, whatever happens to her, in year three. Esther's appointed in year seven. Who remembers Vashti in year seven? And then it's in year 12. And then it's in year 12, Achashverosh can't fall asleep. And then who heard of Bitan Bateresh? You know, like, and it's like, you don't necessarily know. And then the Jew believe, we will kill the Jew. It doesn't necessarily read the way we read it, that everything is connected to each other. They're living, you know, you live in any country there, this government and that government, they pass this law, that law. But really nothing happened in Megillah. So that's why we don't say halal. The rabbis didn't want to make it a holiday bichlal for this reason. We don't want to antagonize the goyim so much. Why do we make it big a holiday? Because 75,000 Persians got killed. That's not enough reason. So it went back and forth. But Tichtov Esther Amalkan, fine, Kituni, the door. It's a wonderful sefer. Written by, Bachrach, Yoshua Bachrach. I don't think he's alive anymore. I think he taught Miklala for a number of years. He wrote Ima Shel Malchut on Rut. He goes through the Megillah, through the Mikorot in Chazal, through the sources in Chazal. Very good work. Kitvuni Lidorot. Write me down for all generations. That was Esther's plea to the sages, but the sages didn't want to do that. And then it got it. So we have to figure out, I want to get to Al-Anisim in a moment, but to figure out why they did make it into a holiday. So that's an interesting question, but there was hesitancy to make it a holiday. Even when they made it as a holiday, we don't say halal. Zeb pointed out the third reason, and it's really a totally opposite reason. What do we don't say? Of course we say hello. The Megillah. Megillah's hello. Kriyatazu Megillah. And the Meiri, I believe, rules that if you're on a desert island on Purim, you're stuck in a snowstorm at the airport and you can't get back and you don't have a Megillah. So you say hello. In other words, I don't have to say hello because I heard Megillah Esther. But if I don't hear Megillah Esther, I have to say hello. So I don't know that we actually paskin like that, and I don't really care, but it's just kind of interesting. He says that, but what's this response saying? This is saying Purim is so important. Purim is so important. We have its own halal. We have a half an hour halal, and everybody gets stressed up and all excited. Every other yantif we have is the plain, you know, plain regular halal. So it's a fascinating. The other two reasons we can't say halal. Nothing changed. We're paying taxes, and then it didn't happen in this year. So that's the reason we haven't addressed so much. Basically, communal events can only a big halal the Jewish community only lives in Israel. There's no dean of a tzibur. Remember when I first came to Yeshiva HaKotel, so they introduced me all the Rambans. You know, they love the Ramban, because the Ramban of all our Rishonim, of all our medieval authorities, is the greatest Zionist. The Ramban, the mitzvot are basically practiced outside of Israel. The Ramban was a really, really big Zionist. Other Rishonim didn't feel it so important. Moshe Feinstein, that's in our day. It's very nice to live in Israel, but you don't have to live in Israel. If you fulfill a mitzvah, it's nice. I'm not here to discuss the importance of living in Israel. Not obviously, we feel, I think anybody here feels, it's a very important mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, as Rav Schachter says, it's a mitzvah of our generation. Every generation, every time period has mitzvah to take on greater importance. But there's no community in the same way outside of the land of Israel. But those are three reasons we don't say halal. They do disagree a little bit. Kriyatazu halal, the reading on the Megillah is halal, and we're still slaves. Obviously, those two reasons, I think, are in conflict. They could agree with the reason that they're not in Israel. Okay. Anyways, but I will say, if I have time at the end, I'll come back to it. But we were just saying, you know, so Purim, there's this hesitancy. The rabbis don't want to make Purim a holiday. And then they finally do, but they don't let us say halal on Purim. And, you know, they're downplaying Purim in many ways. On the other hand, you know, the Rav has the first book I read on the Rav, Reflections of the Rav. The first, really, one of the first things they published in English, Rabbi Besdin, who was the head of JSS at Yeshiva University. JSS, the James Stryer School. I don't know what it's called nowadays. I'm sure it has a different name, but if anybody here remembers what JSS, JSS was basically the Baal Tshuva Yeshiva of Yeshiva University. Yeshiva University was like the first organization, maybe them and Lubavitch was the first, you know, outreach. But YU created this program for people with very weak backgrounds. Instead of, you know, you normally went to IU, you learn Gemara for 6 hours a day. So they created this program, JSS, James Stryer School, to teach Aleph Bay different things that, so for many years, Rabbi Besdin, Alav HaShalom, Abraham Besdin ran a JSS. His motto was, it, not about it. They come in. Abraham was his brother. Thank you very much. Yeah. So thank you for that. Okay. Maybe it was Abraham Besdin then who wrote the book. Maybe it wasn't the one she said, but one of the Besdin brothers wrote a book, Reflections of the Rav. He took excerpts from some of the drushes of the Rav, and Reflections, like 4 pages in easy English. That's before they published a lot of the stuff they published afterwards. So it's interesting. So there's an essay on Rav Soloveitchik explaining this radical, almost heretical statement that Purim is more important than Yom Kippur. Because the name of Yom Kippur is not Yom Kippur. If you look at the Chumash, Yom Kippur is Yom Kippurim. Yom Kippurim. Now, Yom Kippurim means a day like Purim. Yom Kippur is Yom Kippurim. It's a day like Purim, meaning Purim is the most important holiday. Yom Kippur is like, you know, it's like Purim. It's almost like Purim. So, of course, this idea, which is radical to say the least, I want to leave that for now. If there's any time at the end, we can discuss about the Rav and Reflections of the Rav has 4 explanations. I remember, what in the world are we saying? So there's this. It's part of the unknown about Purim. Everything's hidden about Purim. Everything's, you know, beneath the surface. So everything is like upside down. Benapoku. So it's on the one hand, yeah, you know, Purim is like not so important. We don't want Purim, you know. And the fact that we have a whole chapter in the book explaining how we're going to make Purim, writing back and forth letters, yes, accept it, don't accept it, tells you there was a lot of. It wasn't easy. Purim did not become a holiday easily. And on the other hand, it's like the most important holiday of the year. So, and the rabbis and Chazal associate Purim with the receiving of the Torah. I'll say one more thing, and then hopefully we'll get to Alan Nisim itself. The rabbis say, you know, until Purim, maybe we should be a little bit upset at Purim. Until Purim, everybody had an excuse not to be observant, because the Gemara says at Mount Sinai, God put a mountain overhead, but Yetzitu Tachtit. The Jewish people in Camp Tachtit, literally underneath the mountain. So obviously it doesn't mean underneath, it's at the side. But literally, Tachtit, why did it say Tachtit? So the Medrash picks up on this. Tachat, God held up the mountain. If you get the Torah, you guys, cool, that's great. You don't have to accept the Torah. That's fine, it's up to you. Just want you to know, Shem take forth Shem, this is your burial place. You don't have to accept the Torah, but you know, you see this mountain? It's coming down. So the Gemara says, ooh, amazing. So when I come to Shemaim, God said, why did I keep the Torah? I was forced. You can't put a gun out. You can't make me enter into a contract. forget Nasa Benishma. That's a whole other discussion that comes afterward. But this Gemara, so you can't put a gun to somebody's head and that contract is binding. We accept the Torah under duress, and therefore it's not binding on me. I have an excuse. The Gemara said, that's good until Purim. But Purim, the Jewish people, they loved it. Kimu b'kiblu, kimu masha kiblu kvar. The Jewish people accepted what they had already previously accepted, but they accepted with love and desire. So Purim becomes a day of accepting of the Torah, which of course compares it to Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is a day we got the first Torah we got on Shavuos, but we broke that Torah on Shavuos Arba Tammuz. So the forgiveness for Chet Ha'egel, which we're going to read next week, happens on Yom Kippur. That's what Yom Kippur is all about. So the Torah we got, that's why the Gemara says the happiest day of the year, Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av. The people go, we celebrate. Yom Kippur is a day of Kabbalah Satorah, and Purim is a day of Kabbalah Satorah. So you have this sort of wide range. There's a lot to discuss. I'm throwing out sort of all kinds of ideas about what kind of a holiday is Purim. Okay, you can think about that some more, do some research, some articles. Yes, quickly, and then we're going to discuss El Nisi.
Is there a medrash somewhere that says that in the Moshe Mashiach is only going to be Purim?
It's not only a medrash, it's a Rambam. Why is that later? Please, God, I'll discuss that. Right, I think that I may have talked about last year. I don't remember. I have to look my notes. The Rambam says, the Rambam quotes this idea that all of Tanakh will be batel, except for the Chamisha Chumshei Torah and Megillah Esther. Now, the fact that the Rambam says that is radical enough. The problem is it makes the Rambam a heretic, according to the Rambam, because the Rambam says anybody who thinks the Torah is ever going to change is a heretic. That's the Rambam's a big into that. So how the Rambam can define himself as a heretic, but we have to discuss. We'll discuss this at another time. Yeah, that's the Rambam. I have to look it up, the exact language. Maybe at the end of the shir and question and answer, we can do that. But I want to discuss, since it's already late and I didn't begin what I wanted to actually talk about. Let's do the, I just said there's no prayer in the Megillah, but we have Allah Nisim. Okay, so let's discuss Allah Nisim. So the first thing I want to discuss very briefly, the difference between Allah Nisim and Yalav Yavo. Whenever there's a special day, we add Rosh Chodesh, all the Yamim Tovim, and Rosh Chodesh, we add Yalav Yavo. Right. Chan and Kippur, we add Allah Nisim. So it would be, what's the distinction? Seems pretty, I guess on the surface, a pretty obvious distinction, which is, what's the difference? Obviously the words are different, but why do you say Yalav Yavo here and Allah Nisim there? And also Yalav Yavo is said in Ritzeh, right before Modim, and Allah Nisim is said right after Modim. They're both in the last three brachot, right? Shevach Bakasha Hoda'a. They're in the third section of the Shulchan Aruch, but one of them is at the beginning of the third section, Birchat Avoda, where we pray for the restoration of the temple service. Ritzei Hashem, Vashevat Avoda Lidvir Beitecha, return the service, Betechazena Einenu, Beshuvcha Letzion. That's the first bracha. That's where Yalav Yavo is. Then the second bracha, Modim. Thank you, God. Modim. And that's where Allah Nisim, we thank God. So how does one, when do we do Yalav Yavo? When do we do Allah Nisim? Oh. Yocheved, do you want to say something?
I'm thinking maybe Yalav Yavo is sort of in place of the Karban we would have brought had we had the temple.
Okay. Right. So Yalav Yavo is a prayer it's a prayer for reestablishing our temple service. That's why it's in Avoda. Yalav Yavo v'zichroneinu v'ikdoneinu v'zichroneinu v'zichroneinu. The whole bracha is really, it doesn't directly say it, but it's really a bracha to return the biblical service of Avoda. There is no biblical service. There are no korbanas on Rosh Hashanah there are no korbanas on Hallel, on Purim and Chanukah, right? So here, let's see, if you look in Yalav Yavo, right? God should redeem us. So v'hoshienu, even that word, Yeshu, is to redeem us. That's the Ramban in Sefer Shemot, that redemption is the building of the Beit HaMikdash. That's what, in other words, why is the parsha we're reading now, why is it in the book of Shemot? Because Shemot is the redemption of the Jewish people. So the redemption starts with a physical redemption. Then we get into a spiritual redemption at Matan Torah. And then we get the continuation of the spiritual redemption, the Torah coming with us in the Mishkan, building a Mishkan, building the Beit HaMikdash. Well, that's what redemption means. So Yalav Yavo, we don't have these korbanos anymore. And remember, Rosh Chodesh is a biblical holiday. The korbanot on Rosh Chodesh are the exact same as on Pesach and Shavuot. Shtei parim, one ayil, and shiva kvasim, right? 2-1, and so it's a biblical pattern. So I think it's the Rav explained that the Rosh Chodesh is like a temple holiday. We don't really do much outside of the temple, but when the temple's there, Rosh Chodesh is a big deal. And today, you know, we say half hello. May not say hello. But so Yalav Yavo is for the biblical holiday. And it's a prayer. Yeah, and hold on 1 second. And then Alanisim, of course, is not a prayer. It's Thanksgiving, and it's for rabbinic holidays. It's not for what will be. Yalav Yavo, God shall, this is what we want God to do. Alanisim is we thank God for what was. So it's two separate ideas. One is therefore in the bracha of the avoda, and one is in the bracha of hoda'ah, of saying thank you to God. Yeah, well, you want to say something?
I just want to say that Ya'aleh, the terms Ya'aleh v'yavoh, that it should go up like a korban. That it was.
Very good. Ya'aleh, right? Like a korban Allah. Excellent, right? So right at the beginning, right? But it's clear it's a prayer, so it's very different. You got Chanukah Purim on one hand, and the biblical holidays on the other hand, and where it said it's how it's said. Now you'll also notice there's no prayer in Alanisim, right? We give thanks. It's all that you're not allowed to say prayer. There were I see in the Tibina, the wonderful 6-volume set of Rav Jacobson on Tefillah. So he quotes in certain communities they used to have a custom to end Al Hanisim. How do they end it? They ended up they said Kishem Shasita Imahem Pela Kena Seimanu. The same way you did wonders for the previous generations, please do wonders for us. And of course, we don't do that. The Maamar Rutenberg, we that's not what we do. Okay. It's not about asking for anything. It's just to acknowledge, to say thank you, which is very interesting. You know, you don't like, you know, when somebody makes a donation, you don't call them up and say thank you. Would you like to increase your donation? You know, like you say thank you, and then you call them a week later when you increase your donation, or a year later, whatever the case is. But you know, we separate thank you, and we separate when we ask for things, and that's what we do. Okay, now just a few other things. So I want to compare a little bit the Al Hanisim of Chanukah and the Al Hanisim of Purim. So before we start, there's also something fascinating. So, you know, the one on Purim is much shorter. Maybe it's only one, you know, so it make it easier to learn off by heart. You know, by Hanukkah, you say it so many times. By the 8th day, everybody knows Al Hanisim of Purim. By Purim, it's only one day, so you have to memorize it. No, that's just a bad joke. But it is much shorter. The question is, but we'll discuss why is it much shorter. But what the first fascinating thing you notice in the Al Hanisim is who's missing. Who's missing an Al Hanisim on Purim? Who, let's say, who's not missing on Chanukah, or that concept is not missing, right? If you go to the here, I'm going to share my screen with you. I pulled up Al Hanisim. I think I have it here. Or maybe I should get rid of the English just to make it easier to read. Okay, Al Hanisim. So here, I'm just going to do it in Hebrew, you know, just to so it's easier to compare. Okay. So here got the one on Chanukah. Okay, so it starts the same. Al Hanisim, Al Purkan, different ways to thank you. Miracles, salvation, strength, you know, wars that you've done for us. And we tell Chanukah whole story. It was in the days of, okay, so it starts the same. Bimei Matityahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, and Bimei Mordechai Vester, Bishushan Habira. So right away it tells you this is not taking place in Israel. I can see, it doesn't say Bimei, Mordechai Chashmonai in Yerushalayim. It just says, you know, it's interesting, but you know, it's interesting, you know, it's interesting to be rab, but still that's also important. Keshamar Aleim Haman HaRasha, same thing. Bimei Matityahu Keshamda Aleihem Malchut HaRasha. So it's very interesting. On Chanukah, a whole kingdom. In other words, it was the whole people rebelled. Purim, not like that. One guy, Haman. The Persian people have nothing against the Jews. That's they say if they got this letter like to kill the Jews. Like, why are we killing all the Jews? Like it's the Malchut Gavan. It's the Greek way of life, the Greek assimilationist, the Hellenist, right? That on Purim, no, it's one, but one guy can cause a genocide. We know what one person can do, unfortunately. So it's Haman Harasha. There's no mention of Ahasuerus. And Ahasuerus is, you know, interesting, different views on, is Ahasuerus just a bumbling idiot? Is he a really smart guy? You know, who's very shrewd, who stays up. Is he an evil person? Is he not evil? He's just, you know, in the end, he pointed to Mordechai, you know, but he's not mentioned. It's Haman who did it. Yes, of course, Ahasuerus is no tzaddik. You don't just give the guy the, yeah, you want to kill everybody? Give me 10,000, you know, talents, whatever money you're going to raise. And he didn't recognize the economic damage that would happen by getting rid of the Jews. He thought, I'll take my money now. We know throughout history, whenever Jews are expelled, there's always economic suffering of those countries. But so now, and then on Hanukkah, we tell the whole story, you know, what they wanted to do. And God's Lashkicham Torah Techa, we should forget Torah, Chukei Ritzonecha, and you and your mercy, you know, so many things that God did for us. We describe in great detail what happened, and you made a great name for yourself, and a tshuva, Burkan Kayom Hazeh, and then they came in, and then what happened? They came into, in the temple, Vachar came Baba Nechel Berbetecha, they came in, and they reestablished the Beit HaMikdash, Tiaruot Mikdashecha, and they lit candles. There's a mitzvah to light candles. The mitzvah to light candles that we do on Chanukah is to remember what they did in temple. There's no mitzvah to light at home. That's, we discussed on, at Chanukah that it seems to me, I think this is correct. I don't know for sure, but some people say that the mitzvah to light Hanukkah candles was done the Shana Acheret, the Gemara says, in another year. And that probably means after the temple was destroyed. From the year 165 BC to the year 70, there's no mitzvah to light Hanukkah candles. That's in the Beit HaMikdash. And then in the genius of the rabbis, when the temple is destroyed, what's left of Hanukkah? You can't celebrate Hanukkah anymore. There's no temple. You don't celebrate July 4th if there's no America, God forbid. You know, you don't go and, so what are you going to celebrate? So the rabbis converted our house, our Batei Knesiot, into a temple. So now we're going to light candles. But the real mitzvah is to light in there. So a whole story, what happened, the great description, you don't have any of that Purim. It's like in three lines. That's a verse from the Megillah. We know this. This is the pasuk in the Megillah. Let's kill everybody, men, women, children. That's a pasuk in the Megillah. But thank God, you're great. You didn't let him carry out. His thoughts could not come to fruition, and he got his, you know, his, he got, what's the word, you know, he wanted to kill Haman and Mordechai in the tree, he got his own tree back, it was thrown back on him, he got his, what was deserving of him, the talu oto, bepanavaleit, instead of hanging Mordechai, they hung him, that's it, period, whoa, and what happened afterwards, and therefore what, so that's a little bit what we're talking about. There is no therefore what, because nothing happened. That's what we said. Nothing happened after Purim. They're paying taxes. It's not about, and on Alanisim and Chanukah, the focus is on the Jewish people. What happened? You know, we were saved. God, you gave us a great miracle. We could go build the Beit HaMikdash. On Purim, it's about Haman wanted to kill us, and God, you didn't let Haman kill us. It's not against what's happening on the Jewish people at all. Okay. So that's, just give me a second. Hold on. So that's, so there's nothing about what happened to the people. Why not? Okay. So I said, because nothing happened. There's another thing. Purim is really a template of the Jewish people. In other words, Purim has no historical context to the story of Megillat Esther. What do you mean? There's no, in other words, the Megillah, we don't know when it takes place. We don't know who Ahasuerus is. There's a debate in rabbinic literature. Did Purim take place before the Jews went back to Israel, after the Jews went back to Israel? Because Purim is basically a template for the Jew living in exile. I mentioned earlier, that's why it's a take up on the Yosef story. In other words, basically the Megillah is in every generation. It's the state of the Jewish people living in exile, and therefore it doesn't have a particular story. It's written in a very ambiguous form to take place. At that moment, the Purim, the original Purim, how the Jewish people were saved because Haman couldn't carry out his plan. But what happened afterwards, we don't know. We don't know what happens afterwards. And because what happens afterwards is different in every generation. So that's just one. I think, you know, it's very interesting. There's nothing happened afterwards. But who's missing in Al HaNisim, on Purim? It's Esther and Mordechai. It's the exact opposite of the story itself. Megillat Esther, we know there's no God. And not there's no God, God forbid. God doesn't appear. That God is behind the scenes. He's director of the play, who you don't see. You know, you never see the directors off stage. And God is off stage in Purim, and his name isn't mentioned at all. And so in Al HaNisim, it's the exact opposite. Al HaNisim, we don't mention Esther, we don't mention Mordechai. I think it's so beautiful. It's such a fascinating idea that the whole Purim story is all about Esther and Mordechai. And there's no God. The Gemara says at the end of the period of prophecy, that's why there's a whole debate. We don't know what to do. Until Purim, basically, what was the role of the Jewish people? The role of the Jewish people to listen to what prophets say. That's not so easy. The prophets say, do social justice, don't oppress the poor, justice for everybody, take care of the poor. The powerful always like to give themselves more power, right? That's what do prophets do, right? I just read this week a beautiful line. Let's see if I remember it correctly, quoting Jonathan Sacks. He says, there's a difference between a prediction and a prophecy, right? Prophets are not people who predict the future. That's not, a prophet is a social critic. He warns you, you know, anybody can warn you. If you take these really bad economic moves, you do really dumb things, so bad things are going to happen to you, right? That's what a prophet does. He's not predicting the future. So he says, when a prediction happens, that's good. But he says, when a prophecy takes place, happens, that's a tragedy. When the prophets say, you know, the temple is going to be destroyed, we don't want that to be happen. They're not telling you what's going to happen. They're telling you if you don't change, this is what's going to happen. Not because God is punishing you, because that's a natural course of events. If the Jewish people are not united, that's what Purim's all about, the unity of Jewish people, something we very much need nowadays. If the Jewish people are not united, their enemies rejoice. We see right now, Hayom, today we see our enemies rejoice because the Jewish people are disunited, very, very sad. So we just had to listen to prophets. That was very hard to do, but we knew what to do. Purim comes along, our mission is very different. We have to figure out what to do. God doesn't tell us what to do. So Mordechai and Esther are arguing, do this, don't do that. What should we do? But ultimately, that's much better. That's God, we're little children until Purim. And then we grew up a little bit and God had to tell us what to do. So the Megillah itself has no God, no God mentioned. We have to figure out what to do. Of course, in Al HaNisim, a Jew recognizes, of course, God is behind everything. So in the story itself, God doesn't appear. But obviously in Al HaNisim, Mordechai and Esther don't appear. And of course, this is the exact opposite of Pesach, right? On Pesach, Moshe's name doesn't appear in the Haggadah. That's crazy. As I always say, it's like telling the story of the United States without George Washington. I know I'm Canadian, but better than saying Canada and John A. McDonald. People will say, who's John A. McDonald? And today they've sort of canceled him a little bit because, you know, he was anti-blacks and things, you know, that were common in 1867. But George Washington also, if they canceled him, I don't even know. I'm not up on the latest. But so how can you tell the story of American independence without George Washington? How can you have a night where we're obligated to tell story and you don't mention Moshe's name? That's ridiculous. The whole story is about Moshe. But that's, of course, the point that the Haggadah were driving home the notion of God. Of course, Moshe is important, but that's not the focus of the Haggadah. We don't tell history as history. History always has an idea, a message. We're reliving it. So what's the message? A Pesach God is the person who protects us. He passes over our home. He redeems us. He has a message for us. It's all about God. The Yadu meets right. Now, Paro is going to know. I don't know who God is. Paro is going to know. The Jewish people are going to know. So we ignore Moshe. It's not historically true, but it doesn't have to be historically true. And on Purim, we do the exact opposite. We ignore God because there's a maturation. The idea is to recognize God even when God isn't obvious. And that's why Purim and Pesach, you know, we can compare. Okay, so there are three holidays we've already compared Purim to Yom Kippur. That is Yom Kippurim. That's the day we received the Torah. That's the explanation we've given so far why Purim is like Yom Kippur. Obviously, Purim and Hanukkah, because they're the two rabbinic holidays, or the holidays of Thanksgiving, the holidays of Al Nisim. And now we're comparing Purim and Pesach, which is, okay, it's not an issue this year, but the reason when there's Purim, when there's two Adars, like there was last year and there will be again next year, actually Purim's going to be quite late, when there will be two Adars, so we celebrate Purim in Adar Beit. It should be Adar Aleph. Why push it off? Mitzvah Baliyatcha, when you have a mitzvah, do it right away. Adar's the first Adar is the real Adar. Adar Beit is an add-on. It's not meant. They sometimes add it in the last day of the year. So, but no, the Gemara says we want Purim and Pesach next to each other. The redemption of Purim, redemption of Purim have to be much next to each other because that's, because the Geula Legula, Mismach Geula Legula, the redemption and redemption are near each other, but they're totally opposite redemptions. One, the redemption is totally about God, and one, the redemption is totally about man. That's the beauty. At the beginning of the year, Purim, Pesach at the beginning, it's all God, God, God. Okay, by the end of the year, we're ready for Purim. But we have to transition. Purim and Pesach have to be next to each other. What's true in our calendar is also true historically. Purim, Pesach is the first time, the beginning of the Jewish people happens on Pesach, and Purim is the end of Tanakh. Esther is, you know, all there are a few books at the same time. Esther, Malachi, Devarim, but Esther is basically the last of the 24 books of Tanakh. So we've gone from Pesach to Purim, historic in Tanakh. Tanakh is the word of God. In the Chumash, in the Tav of Tanakh, in the Torah part of Tanakh, it's words, God's words dictated to Moshe. In the Nevim and the Ksuvim, it's God's indirect word. It's generally the Navi, that's the basic difference. The Navi puts it in his own words. It's not a dictation from God, it's a Navi. So every Navi has their own style. You can see there the stylistic like changes between every Navi. But basically, the Tanakh is the communication of God to man. Now it's Purim. We don't have that anymore. Now we're moving Tor Shabbat Peh. God held up the mountain. Ah, but finally on Purim, we accepted Tor Shabbat. What's Tor Shabbat Peh? Tor Shabbat is all about man. And what happens when there's a debate between man and God? We spoke about that last week in Torah Lo B'Shamayim. God is very happy. We overrule God. We don't care what God. Once God gave us the Torah, he has no say in it. It's up. So that's Purim is a very transitional point in Jewish history where we were from God to man. But then therefore it's all the more important in El Nisim to talk about only God and not to talk about Purim at all. And the focus, basically what happened on Purim, Haman wanted to kill us, like that old joke, you know, all days, they wanted to kill us, we were saved, let's eat, you know, that's basically, in Hanukkah, it builds up, there's no killing of the Jews, it's just, we should become Greeks, they're not interested in killing us. Haman, he wanted to wipe us, that's what Purim is about, and that's of course why the Levush writes this, I think it's quoted in the Mishnah Berurah, at the beginning of the laws of Purim, why is there no meal on Hanukkah? Maybe you sing songs, fine, you can make a Suda mitzvah, but there's no mitzvah to have a meal on Hanukkah, but there is on Purim, because Purim is a physical holiday and Hanukkah is a spiritual holiday. And in many ways, you know, one of the things you can do, it's if you want to, you know, get upset about how ineffective, I shouldn't say this, but how sometimes, you know, kids don't know the basics, go into, you know, go into a typical school, whatever, and ask somebody, what happened first, Hanukkah or Purim? You'd be amazed how many people are not sure. Now, it's a 50-50, you know, guess, but, you know, they're 300 years apart, but not everybody realizes that Purim happened before Hanukkah, way before, but It's also, it's the same thing, physical and spiritual, just like Pesach and Shavuot. So Hanukkah is already beyond the period of Tanakh. Purim is the transitional period, and Hanukkah is not in, but it's the same idea. We begin with our physical freedom. So Purim, we party, you know, all the amazing things. And then on Hanukkah is the spiritual holiday. But Al-Nisim is short to the point. Haman wanted to kill us. God saved us. Okay, let's do. Lev, what was the question? I said I might get to at the end. I'm sorry, I forget that you asked.
Rambam.
Oh, the Rambam. How does the Rambam say that? Yeah. So let's very quickly. I'm going to pull up the Rambam. I don't have it prepared. Like I didn't prepare the source, but I will quickly look it up. Let's go here. Safari. Halacha. Everybody see this, right? Mishnah Torah. Yeah. Sefer Zmanim, right? Sefer Zmanim. You see here, Hanukkah and Purim go together, right? Sefer Hanukkah, and this is the end of Hilchot Purim. According to Megillah. And then the Rambam writes like this. The end is the last law, I believe, in Hilchot Purim. Is that how you write the Megillah? Okay. Tzaricha Kore, okay. Mitzvah to eat and celebrate. Okay, it's a long parak. Okay. Matanot lev yonim, have a suda. All the Tanakh, except for the Torah, Nevi'im and Tuvim, are in the future going to be nullified in the Messianic period. Chutz memigilat Esther, v'hi kayemet kechamesha chum shei Torah. It'll be like the Torah, the Tanakh. Be a lot easier in Chidon HaTanakh. Lots more people can compete in Chidon HaTanakh. Only 6 books to learn. Ukehilchot shel Tor shebal peh sheinam b'teilim. They'll be like the oral law that cannot change. Bapal pi shekol zikronot zerot yivutal. Even though they'll all be forgotten. Yemei Purim eila lo yivatel. Right. So that's what the Rambam writes. They'll only be the holiday of Purim. So let's see very quickly if I can remember what they comment. Let's take a quick look. Remember here, but here. Ayin Yerushalmi, okay. Right, so the Ravid doesn't like it, obviously. Amar Avram, lo yivatel davar mikosvarim. Shein sefer, shein bo limud. What are you, nuts? The Ravid wasn't afraid to. No, it's Amar Avram. That's Rav Avram ben David, the Ravid. He's like 15 years older than the Rambam. He's living in Provence, in between France and Spain. Lo yivatel davar mikosvarim. No, nothing's going to be nullified. She'ein sefer, she'ein bo limud. I love that language. There's no book that doesn't have a message. About kach amru afilu, even if you were going to get rid of anything, you would never get rid of Purim. In other words, there's the most to learn from Purim, but it's impossible things would got rid of. How the Rambam can say such a thing is a little mind-boggling. It's pretty wild. Right. Now the Rambam's not talking about changing any mitzvah because according to the Rambam, you can only have, I've explained this before, right? I often ask people, and with this, we will have to end. Why there's 613 mitzvah. There's 6 million mitzvah. What do you mean 613 mitzvah? Shabbos, there are 5,000 mitzvah. What do you mean? There are 30 amalek. What do you mean 613 mitzvah? So what difference does it make? We know there are thousands of biblical laws, but there are only 613 mitzvot. So they're in categories. What difference does it make if it's part of the 613 mitzvot or not? Who cares if something is a biblical law? Like the Rambam says, anything derived from the 13 principles, like a klal uprat, Rabbi Shmuel, that's 98% of the Torah. That there are 39 melachot on Shabbat is not written in the Torah. It's derived. The rabbis derive it. Anything derived, it's a biblical law. But it's not a mitzvah. It's not one of the Torah mitzvah. Who cares? If it's a biblical law, you have to observe it. So very simply, I don't have time to develop this now. Very simply, the answer is that interpretation can change. We get a Sanhedrin now. You know, I know it sounds radical. The Sanhedrin can decide there are only 24 of Melachot on Shabbos, not 39. We think writing is not included in the prohibition on Shabbos, and writing will then become allowed on Shabbos. Or we think there are 45 Melachot. We think more things are prohibited. That's totally fine. That's the right and the obligation of a Sanhedrin to interpret the Torah as they see fit. We don't have a Sanhedrin. That's the whole, you know, whatever. But 613, that cannot change. That's what the Rambam says. It's an apikoris and that can never change. But, so unless it's a pasuk in the Chumash, it's not part of Taryag Mitzvah. So anything in Nevi'im and Ketuvim is not the pasuk in Chumash. So even though we learn all of Kavod Shabbos and Onik Shabbos that we have to honor as a pasuk in Yishayahu, that's how we know we have to get ready on Friday. It's not just there's a mitzvah to eat, have nice things, Kavod and Onik. Those halachas are derived. We read it on the Torah of Yom Kippur are derived on from Yishayahu. It's not a pasuk in Chumash. It's not a mitzvah from the Torah, and that can change. So it's batel. We don't gonna have it anymore. I think it's astounding, but it's not just Ev. It's not just some medrash somewhere. I mean, I don't know what's interesting. I don't know what's more important, some medrash somewhere or the Rambam, but I assume the Rambam. The Rambam carries more authority. It's an interesting discussion. The Rambam probably practically carries more authority than a medrash, because the Rambam's writing a halachic book. The medrash is not a halachic book. Anyways, it's getting late. Let's do a quick review, and then I'll quickly do some of the questions. So we discussed Purim, the whole difficulty. Should Purim be a holiday? Shouldn't be a holiday? Why we don't say Halal and Purim? Three reasons. It didn't happen in Israel. No big deal. We pay taxes. That's why chapter 10 is in the Megillah. Nothing really changed. Or maybe Purim is so important that we have its own Halal for 10 chapters of the Megillah. It's so important. It's more than Yom Kippur. So we just gave one idea that Yom Kippur, because we accepted the Torah willingly only on Purim, not on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is rammed down our throat with the mountain. I will say one other very brief thing, and you can think about that. It's better to worship God with feasting and fasting, right? We can worship God in celebration and worship God in shul all day, banging our hearts. It's a much higher level. It's a much harder level to worship God and fast. There are other explanations, but that's so a whole discussion. Should Purim be a holiday? Shouldn't be a holiday? The rabbis, no, yes, we don't want to celebrate that we defeated non-Jews. But Purim is a holiday, but we don't say Hallel. And then we discussed Yalav Yavo and Al Hanisim. Yalav Yavo is for the biblical holidays. It's really a prayer for the restoration of our service. And therefore, it's said in the Bracha of Avoda, Ritzeh, where we talk about the restoration of our temple service. And Modim, Al Hanisim is on the past. We thank God for these great events in Jewish history. We do allude to that in those events and our events by Yamim Haim Bezmanazeh. And we don't add, even though some customs did, we don't add any prayers, just Thanksgiving. And that we say in the bracha, of course, in Al Hanisim, but it's much shorter. There's no mention of Esther. Very strange. The exact opposite of the Megillah, where there's no mention of God. So in the Al Hanisim, there's no mention of Esther, because that's the whole point. Yes, on the facts, you know, as it happens, God is behind the scenes. But when we pray, we reflect on what happened. Obviously, it's all about God, and Purim and Pesach are the opposites in this way. Pesach, we ignore Moshe. The story ignores Moshe, so to speak, although that's not, of course, Moshe is important, but not at the Seder night, not the night we're giving Thanksgiving to recognize God, not then. And the same way, that's the opposite of Purim. And Purim and Pesach have to be next to each other, the two types of redemption, but two totally opposite types of redemption. Purim, in many ways, is a higher level, right? It's the end of God doesn't talk to us directly anymore. Esther's the end of the prophets, and we have to figure it on our own. It's more meaningful, but it's harder, and we're going to have debate and discussion. We're not sure what to do. But the Al Hanisim is, and what it, Haman wanted to wipe us out, period, end of story. That's it. Okay, I think more or less, let me just quickly take the questions I see. I haven't really looked at them. If you can send me, Ross, if you want the link to the series on Zmanim. Okay, yep. Okay, I'll try to copy this now. Okay, David Eisen, I think it's fair to say the Jews in Shushan can only survive, right? How assimilated were they? Where was no place for them to thrive? That's a very interesting point. I don't know. I mean, we seem to thrive here in America. I don't know. I understand it's a very different environment. You don't, in other words, they had no choice. They had to assimilate. Is that what you're saying, David? I'm not sure. But it is an interesting point. No place for them to thrive. Maybe. The idea for Avinat, I'm sorry, I don't have to think about that more. The idea for Avinat Paskins that those soldiers do not have a kosher Megillah are, I did not know that. Following the Meiri, they have to say hello. Very nice. Very nice. Thank you for that. Okay. Could the Purim story have an affinity with the struggles of conversos and the Jews? Of course. That's when I say Purim is a template for the Jew in exile. Obviously, we have to read it like, people read it in political theory. I mean, more than any other story. The Megillah can be read on so many levels. That's why there's so many books. Everybody reads this Purim story on a different level. Is it, like I say, is it attacking the Jews in the diaspora? We lowlifes who haven't moved to Israel. What are you, crazy? You don't recognize God. You don't recognize the danger. And it can be read in many different levels. So absolutely, I'm sure conversos would struggle. And we living in Toronto, After, and even people today in Israel. So I think today we have to read, how do we keep the unity? Obviously, what's going on now, it's worse than it's ever been, the potential tear between Jews in Israel and Jews outside of Israel. Purim is about Mishloach Manot, Israel, we're one people, and the fate, that's what Rav Soloveitchik also explained. Purim teaches us the fate of Jews are intertwined. You can't say this Jew is assimilated. No. The Jews in Persia may have been totally assimilated. Achashverosh Haman didn't care, right? We share one fate. That's the Rav always talked about it. Israel, diaspora, we're one people. So that's, we have to figure out from the Purim story, what are we going to do? I don't know. It's a very hard question. I wish I knew. I'd love to hear your advice of what I can, David, maybe you can tell me, what can I do living in Toronto to help? I don't know. You probably wonder what you can do in Beit Shemesh, what you can do to help besides going to whatever. It's a hard question. But Megillah, it's a hard book, right? That's a Tanakh. You're not supposed to go half an hour, enjoy it, and bang, come on, yay, and have a party and get drunk. And right, why do we get drunk? We get drunk because when a Jew drinks, the inside should be like the outside. Tocho kaboro. It shouldn't. When a normal person drinks, so they start talking like they're embarrassed what they said. But if a Jew is full of Torah, there's nothing to be embarrassed. Purim is about everything's hidden, so we're revealing the inside when we drink. Now, if you're the type of a person who's afraid when you get drunk, you're going to say things that you're going to regret, then you can't drink on Purim. It's the idea that what's the inside and the outside is the same. We're taking off our mask. Everything, these customs are beautiful. But if somebody has ideas what we can do to help, Purim should be the story of the unity of Jewish people, I would love to hear. Okay, Yalav Yavo is only said when there is a korban. Right, correct. That's what we're saying. Is there biblical holidays, the restoration of the service? You probably said that afterwards. Okay, Purim and Chanukah are not holidays in Torah. That's correct. How is King A identified as, oh, it's Achashverosh. Zeres, right, whose father was Darius. So King wasn't a commoner. Standing. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know all the right who Achashverosh was. Right, there's a whole discussion about that. But why does it mean he went? Oh, you're saying he wasn't a commoner. His father was theirs. Right. According to the rabbis, it's Vashti Amalkat. The Malbim has a beautiful, you know, pshat there. Achashverosh calls Vashti Hamalka, and it's V'tama'ein Hamalka Vashti. When to Achashverosh, she is only Vashti, and she's the queen because she's married to the queen. So it's Vashti Hamalka. And when Vashti refuses to come, Vatima'ein Hamalka Vashti. No, I'm the Malka. I happen to be Vashti. Yeah, so I don't, whatever. That's how the rabbis, when the rabbis read the Mishnah, they're not necessarily explaining historical. They don't have to be historically accurate. They're, you know, it's like when a lot of the stories on the rabbis, the stories may not be true, but they may not have happened, but they are true. Now, even if a story didn't happen, it doesn't mean it's not true. I know that's, maybe you can, you know, but, in certain level. Okay. Rabbi Lam said the concept of holding a mountain should be viewed as allegorical. Yeah, of course. He said the Jews felt psychologically under duress except the Torah. Yeah, yeah. I, of course, I'll meet Rashi Mar like that. But it does say Tachdid. It's as if they were physically compelled. Okay. Very good. Okay. Somebody said to me privately, Achashverosh was celebrating that. Yes, of course. The rabbis say he thought the 7 years of Hasvikelim, Mikelim, Shonim. He brought the Kelim of the Beit Hamikdash and he had them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the classical reading. But whether it's necessary, according to other readings, no, it happened later, happened much later. But yeah, okay. In Chazal, the Megillah took place in between the first and the second temple. You related to Purim, why not to 1880s and 1948? I'm not sure what you're talking about. I know what the it is to Purim, but yeah, 1940, everything's related to Purim, everything in the Galut. I'm not sure if you want to clarify.
You said it related to the Joseph story. Why not to the return of to the land in great
it's also, yeah, yeah. It's, that's not a comic from a biblical perspective. It's clear that the story of the Megillah is a rewriting, if you can use that term.
It's also a story that some of your heroes don't look good in because they only accepted
Even Yosef, there's much to criticize. Of course, this gets to the old question. You know, how when we read the books, how much are we willing to, you know, criticized our great heroes. Yeah, absolutely. Now, when it says the Sanhedrin, I just read Ratzui L'Rav Achav, the majority of his brothers, the Mar says the Sanhedrin didn't like Mordechai. They viewed him in a very negative light. Yeah, then obviously they make mistakes and whatever. But anyways, I will say, I mentioned right at the beginning, I'll just end with this, that you know, I started that. I'm at this rabbinic conference, J.J. Schachter, really a very inspiring 3 days of learning. So Rabbi Brander was here, as he's actually speaking at here in Bell Harbor, where we are together over Shabbos. I'll go hear him speak at the shul and on Shabbos morning. But he began with the Kim Acharesh Tacharishi Berevach Ahi. Mordechai tells Esther, if you're quiet at this time, you know, who knows? Revach Atzala Yamod LiYudim Mimakom Acher. There'll be salvation too, but you won't be part of it. You'll lost. And that's how he started. He was really the only one. It was all about learning, but he addressed a little bit the situation today. And we have to speak up. People have to speak up. Macharish Tacharishi. We're not allowed to. We believe Revach Atzala will come, but we have to be part of that. And it's very hard. But being quiet is not an option. And again, that gets to the tension that's becoming full force now. How much can Jews in the diaspora, how much are they allowed to weigh in? And Israel, I don't want, you know, whatever. It's but that's I think how we today should be reading our Megillat Esther. This Purim, I think, is very much we should read it on that level. But then I would love to hear ideas that people have. And yes, a much longer conversation. Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. I appreciate it. Sunday morning, Rabbi Liebtag. And
can I ask you something?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to wish everybody
something. I don't think I heard it discussed was the actual reason behind why we celebrate like the 14th in certain parts and the 15th in other parts.
Right. So as a story unfolds,
it's the only chag that's
right. So that's why some read it as a holiday of tension. I remember.
Well, so what I wanted to say was that I heard it was because the Yehudim didn't want to accept Purim after.
Right. That's correct. They didn't want to.
Therefore, they were punished, and they said, you can't celebrate it on the 14th. You have to celebrate it on the 15th.
And in the Megillah, Mordechai said the 15th because they fought an extra day in Shushan. But it's clear the Jews didn't accept it, and it went through stages. But if you look at the Megillah, Mordechai wanted Purim to be 2 days for everybody. There happened in Shushan a day later, but as a Jewish people, when we look back to celebrate, we're one people. So Purim is a 2-day holiday. It's 14th, 15th. We don't say Tachanun today, right? There were, you know, the only way you can celebrate today, Purim, the 14th, 15th, if you go to Israel and you go to Tel Aviv and then Yerushalayim, you can figure it out to hear the Megillah 4 times, which of course a lot of the yeshiva guys do, you know, to party an extra day, whatever. But it was meant to be 2 days. And I think David Silver pointed out, right? In Masechet Megillah, it opens Megillah Nikra B'Yeralav Yabet Yud Gimel Yudal Tefav. The Masechet Megillah opens up with dissensions, so to speak. The Jews are reading it on 5 different days. At this age, you live here, you live there, everything, you know, all dependent. It's sort of Purim didn't unite the people. He has a whole theory that the rabbis wanted to downplay Purim. That's why they stuck it in Masechet Megillah. It talks about Torah reading. Half of Masechet Megillah is not about Purim, it's about Torah reading. They wanted to sort of take it out of this own party and put it part of the structure of the Beit HaKnesset of Kriyat HaTorah. They wanted to downplay some of the wildness that Purim lends itself to. But, you know, again, that we have a concept of a Purim Katan, where individual Jews, great events happen to them. They celebrate their own Purim. Purim's a complex, like everything in Judaism, it's complex, but Purim is an especially complex holiday. And because the Megillah is, I say, a template, it's not written in the historical time frame. It's written as a template for the Jew for all time. Obviously, it's going to have it's true about every holiday and everything in the Chumash, but more so by Purim, we have to read it in terms of our lives today and try to apply it. Okay? Any other comments? Marty, yes, how are you?
Fine, I'm fine. I used to come to New York from Toronto. I used to stay up with a family who lived on the same block as the car wash store. And we used to go there on Friday night. They started Mecca when it was darker.
Yeah, in the Hasidic world, they're very Rabbeinu Tamish, even on Friday. So I don't know if they, you know, will turn on lights or drive their car 20 minutes after sunset, although maybe they will. But davening mincha for sure. Lots of Hasidim daven mincha way after all daven mari. But the truth of the matter is that's the psak in the show. It's very hard. Why that's so? That's what the Vilna Gaon got sort of upset. The Vilna Gaon said, "Hachush machish." The Vilna said, "You walk outside, it's pitch black. How can Rabbeinu Tam say it's still yesterday? It's pitch black outside." So that's a whole, you know, it's a really complicated area of halakha. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Willig years ago wrote a series of articles, and it's not just 72 minutes. It has to do with how far you live from the equator, of course, so many things. But yes, the Hasidim will daven mincha when it's quote unquote dark, and they hold that's not an issue.
And about Purim, I remember being a shir in Toronto many years ago with Seymour Epstein. Mm-hmm. And I remember what he said that it's about assimilation. How do you know that? The Megillah begins with a Mishnah and it ends with a Mishnah. So you know that in the Megillah, the Jews haven't learned anything. So I always found that a very interesting comment.
They hadn't learned anything.
Yeah, because they end up as,
right. Yeah, listen, that's it. What were the Jews thinking? You know, you don't hear too much from the Jews. Kind of like on the Pesach story, you don't hear too much from the Jews while the events are happening. But the rabbis are critical of Jewish people. Yeah, they enjoyed the Hashanah party. They did all kinds of things. Yeah, but. But, you know, it's what can they say? Purim is.
I have one more question.
Sure.
And now that Yavo,
yeah.
Why on Chagim do you move it out of the Hudah section and you put it?
No, it's not. So that's what I'm saying. It's not under the Hodah section. It's in the third section. Britzei begins the third section of Hodah. The whole section is called Sheva first. Hodah. Even though, but the Hodah is the middle one, really. It's Modim. Okay. The Hodah has three brachot. One on Avodah, service in the temple. One on Thanksgiving. One on peace. But they're all under the framework of Hodah. So that's what you're explaining. The Yalav Yavo, which is biblical holidays and sacrifices, Yaleh, like Rosie, I think.
Why does that change on Yontif?
So on Yontif, so we're praying for the restoration of the sacrifices in Ritzei. Ala Nisim, Chanukah, Purim, we're not praying for the restoration of anything, especially Purim. I mean, it's just a form of thanksgiving. So it's in what we call Hodam in Imodim. Yeah, that's what we say. Yalav Yavo and Al Nisim. The themes are very different. The context of, even though both are the special. And by the way, I forgot to mention, if you forget Yalav Yavo, you have to repeat the Shemone Esrei. If you forget Al Nisim, you don't, which is kind of interesting. You might think that Thanksgiving is more important than asking for a restoration, which I would agree with. I never thought of it like this until right now. But if I ask myself, yes, I would say Thanksgiving is more important. But halakhically, if you forget the Hodah, you don't have to repeat the Shemone Esrei. But if you forget the Yalav Yavo, that's a fundamental aspect of the Tefillah, and you have to repeat the Shemone Esrei. That's interesting halakha. I have to think more about that. Why by Thanksgiving? We don't, but that's the famous halakha. If you forget Al Nisim, you don't have to repeat the Shemone Esrei. Okay, everybody, I think it's late. I know Shabbos are getting later, Baruch Hashem, even in Israel. David, wow. What time is Shabbos in Beit Shemesh? I don't know, but I guess it's pretty soon. Thank you very much. And everybody should be well. We should hear good news. We should really pour
thank
him.
Thank you. Good Shabbos.
The Simcha should be a time. Pour him is a time when things look dark, that they get better. So let's hope that happens today. Amen. Unfortunately, there's a little too much, you know, darkness, and we need Ora B'Simcha B'Sason Ainti Elanu that we should have. I want to wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom, and thank you very much. Okay.
Shabbat, well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay, my pleasure. Okay, be well. We'll see you next week, please, God.
Thank you. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you. Good Shabbos.
Snow in Ottawa this weekend, too?
Another 10 centimeters, another 10 to 15. What about you?
Are they saying Toronto? What I hear, 30. I'm not in Toronto, but that's what my Toronto spies tell me. They're expecting up 30? To 30 centimeters. Snowstorm. Yeah. What can you do?
Today or tomorrow?
March.
Today,
I mean, what do you expect?
Oh, yes, I forgot. Every March, there's a big snowstorm.
In like a lion, out like a lamb, you know?
That's March. Okay, enjoy wherever you are.
Thank you very much. Have a good Shabbos. Okay, bye-bye.